Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Before we get to my guest this week, timely guest, by the way, we're in the middle of the Major League Baseball All-Star break, so wanted to put this out at the right time. Phil Cusi, a Major League Baseball umpire for 22 years. I've always wanted to talk to an umpire and hear what it's like to be on the field and do what they do and how they do it. And it's a really cool conversation. This is one of the reasons I love having a podcast, because you get to talk to people you never would get to talk about in real life. But before we get to Phil, a couple of things. I got tour dates coming up in August. I'm going to be in Plano, Texas. I'm going to be in Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm pretty much going to the hottest places on the planet. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com, and see if I'm coming to your area, and come on out and see some shows. I'm going to be in Minnesota coming up. I'm going to be in Massachusetts. So check it out. Love to see you guys on the road. And before we get to my guests, I did want to tell you about a, went to a restaurant, nice restaurant, kind of an upscale, cool. Can we just stop with the seating at these restaurants that tries to be really cool and not comfortable? The food was good. The drinks were good. The environment was good. It was a cool place, kind of a hip, like kind of lounge vibe. But these chairs were these metal chairs, straight up metal stools, bar stools, with a hole like the size of a softball in the middle of the stool seat, and a little back. So the back was a piece of metal about the size of an iPhone. So if you're a little person or a small chimp, that back support would be fine. The hole was between the metal and the hole in the seat. It was ridiculous. The whole thing was just, I have no ass, by the way. It's like bone and some tissue and skin and then some hair. Okay, sorry you had to see that image in your head, but so I got no padding there. So every 10 minutes, no exaggeration, I'm getting up, I'm sitting down, I'm getting up, I'm sitting down, because my ass is killing me from sitting on what I can only describe is a soup can. Like, basically, take a can of Progresso soup or Campbell's Chunky, whatever your preference is for soup. Take the can, put it on the floor, and then squat on it. That's what I was sitting on for 2.5 hours at this restaurant. So stop. Just give me a big old padded stool. Stop trying to be cool with seating. There's certain things you just don't be cool. Old school. Seating, forks and knives that are just normal. And yes, please help me. I have no ass. All right. Check out Phil Cusi. A really great conversation with him, and really enjoyed it. And again, something cool and different. I think you're going to enjoy it. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Very excited to have on my guest this week, a Major League Baseball umpire for 22 years, Phil Cusi. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be here.
So it is great to have you on. I always wanted to talk to an umpire, Major League umpire, and what that entails. It seems like a fascinating job. But before we do that, let's talk about this special charity that you founded for, in the name of a good friend of yours, Robert Longo, the Robert Longo ALS Fund, which is in its 18th year. Tell us a little bit about Robert and why you decided to do this charity and how that came about.
Yeah. So, Robert was one of my best friends. We were actually cousins through marriage. My mother's brother married his mother's sister. So we grew up together. We were the same age. We went to junior high together. We were the same family barbecues and events and things like that. And we graduated high school together. He was an all-state linebacker in our hometown of Belleville, New Jersey. He went on to play football at Harvard. And he was just our go-to guy. And one day he said to me, you know, something's going on with me. My hand is numb and it's getting worse. And then it was going up his arm and down the other arm. And he was diagnosed with ALS, better known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And he said to me, I've just been handed a death sentence. And that was hard for him to say and very hard for me to hear. And he fought the disease for 5 years. And for those people that I hope know nothing about ALS, how terrible it is, it takes away all muscle movement. So in 5 years, and it affects everyone, you know, different patients differently, but in those 5 years, Robert lost the movement of everything, including his voice. And the only thing that he had was the movement of his eyes. So he was able to blink. He was able to, you know, it's a devastating disease. And so the last time that I saw Robert alive, he was unable to talk, but I said to him that he would never have to worry about his daughter's, who was 9 at the time, education. We would raise money to send her to wherever she wanted to go. And I'm so proud to say that she followed in her father's footsteps and graduated from Harvard, and she's now attending Harvard Law. So we started just really without giving it much thought. We wanted to just raise money to buy Robert a computer that he was able to type with his eyes. And again, we're talking about, you know, 18 years ago, that the technology, even more than that, the technology was primitive and not anywhere near what it is today. But that's how it began. We raised money to buy him that computer. And the money that was left over, I said, you know, I really didn't want to be in the fundraising business, but what do I do now? And so we started the Robert Longo ALS Fund. And as I say, this is our 18th year. It's the same 600 people come to the event every year. And it's just our local community. Last year, we had to do it virtually. So I started for the first time, I started a web page, and now it's just grown into something that I could never have imagined. So people can go on to our website, wefightals.org, and follow the donate button.
We had a friend that passed from ALS, and we saw how it, you know, sort of slowly crippled him, and it's really rough to see. And it's a very good thing that you're doing. You know, I applaud you for that. And you have amazing people. And my buddy, Bob Costas, who's been on our show a few times and we're longtime friends, acted as a host, and it's a really great event. I want to talk to you about umpiring, and that is a fascinating job to me. And I want to talk about your story too, a little bit before we have to let you go, but what makes a good umpire versus not a good umpire? Why is it so hard to get through umpire school and training? I mean, you had to do it 4 or 5 times. What, and explain a little bit of that to my listeners who have no idea, other than sort of being fans, what that would be like.
Yeah. Well, first of all, people don't realize, you know, it goes back to what you just said about ALS. Unless you see it and you live it, you don't know how devastating it is. And unless you have ever attempted to umpire, you have no idea what the job is. I mean, you know, I don't know what your job is like. I've never done that. So there's things that are difficult that I wouldn't even guess are a part of it, you know, or an obstacle, you know, for you. Mm-hmm. So umpiring is tough. It's a tough job. You know, it's a lot more than ball, strike, safe, out. So, you know, you have to go through school. There's an umpire school. And if you're in the top percentage, you would go out into the lowest of the low minor leagues. And so then you're in the system.
Right. So what are they teaching you in the school? And what is it that, why do some people succeed and others don't? Because some have a better eye for balls and strikes. Some are better with bang, bang plays. Like what differentiates somebody that makes it and somebody that doesn't?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors. You know, like you say, you have to have good eyesight. But I mean, we have guys that have corrective vision. You know, back in the day, no one wore glasses, but we have guys that wear glasses now. We have guys that wear contact lenses, but instinct is also a part of it. You know, they say you can't teach instinct, but you know, if you work hard and you know, you repetition, right? Mm. Sometimes will breed instinct, but it's just a question. You know, back at school, they're teaching you the very basics. You know, where might be the best place to stand to take a play, or you know, your head height for you know, squatting behind a catcher to watch balls and strikes. And then as you go along, you know, you kind of tweak that. But interestingly, when things go wrong, because everyone has slumps in their job, right? So sometimes, you know, you're working and the baseball looks like the size of a basketball coming in. You can't miss it. And other times, you know, you go through a slump. Maybe you had a long flight or maybe you had a bad night's sleep. You know, we're at the airport every 3 days flying to a different city.
Maybe a few too many vodkas the night before. I'm not saying. I'm just saying. You know what I mean? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, well, or maybe red wine, depending on the, you know.
There you go.
Some days the ball looks like a golf ball coming in. That's how, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just a question of repetition and timing. And that's really, you know, but as much as you tweak your own game, when things go wrong, you wind up going right back to basics. And I found myself, you know, doing that over the past, I'll say over the past year and a half. And I was just not seeing plays as well as I wanted to at first base. And I went back to basics and took an angle that I learned at umpire school, different than what I kind of, you know, learned from different guys or saw different guys.
You were in a slump at first base in the sense like you weren't sort of getting those bang, bang plays, right? Like sort of you're supposed to listen for the ball to hit the mitt, like kind of in conjunction with your eyes. Was that kind of what was missing there?
Yeah, I just, for whatever the reason, I didn't feel comfortable. I just wasn't seeing the play. I wasn't seeing the close ones. And I was watching film to try to figure out why. And I said, you know what, let me go back to the basics and let me take a different angle. And I did that. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm not saying I still never missed them, but I felt so much better. I was so much more comfortable. And it was because I just went back to the basics. And sometimes that's the most important thing that you can do is just remember the basics and stick with those.
Yeah. And stay off the red wine, obviously. That's just a little bit. That's
well, red wine is good for you. Let's not forget it. Yeah. You throw in a nice Amarone and all of a sudden, you know.
You're talking to a fellow Italian, my friend. I hear you. So let me ask you, for you, is one particular position, I mean, everybody listening knows, but if somebody listening doesn't know, you know, you're a part of a crew and you rotate, you know, one's behind the plate, then another day you're at first base, the second. Is there a particular position that's has been the hardest for you or the most challenging?
You know, so we are a four-man crew and we rotate clockwise. And so if I have the plate tonight, I'll go to third tomorrow. And we just go right around the clock. And if we have a day off, we stay in the rotation. If we, you know, we do have vacation time and we'll come back to the same rotation. But, you know, but the answer is, you know, every position is different. If it's a big game, I would like to be behind the plate, but not so much so that I say, oh, gee, I'd like to work the plate every day. I mean, that would be very difficult to do, but, you know, every position is different, but I guess, you know, if you're pinning me down to one position, you know, I would prefer to work the plate in a big game.
So are there, you know, I can imagine this is the case for refs in the NBA or, you know, the NFL. I'm a Patriots fan and Tom Brady talked about how he could be hard on the refs. Is there one particular player or two over the years that have been, maybe it's somebody retired, so you could talk about it, but like you see him coming to the plate and you're kind of like, oh God, he's going to complain. Like, you know what I mean? Like just somebody that just is never happy kind of thing. Or you've had interesting interactions with.
It isn't like it used to be when I first came up, because with replay, we have very few arguments on the bases anymore, but you know, people still complain about pitches.
Right.
And, you know, people say, well, who's the biggest complainer about balls and strikes? And my answer is always the same. And it's accurate. The biggest guy who comes up to complain is the guy who just went 0-for-20 at bat. Because, you know, he's in a little bit of a slump and he's looking for all reasons as to why. And as I described, maybe I'm in the wrong position. Maybe my head is too high, too low. And he's thinking of those things too. Maybe I'm not getting my hands out in front of the bat, but maybe it's the umpire. So, you know, we get blamed for a lot of different things, but.
So you work these different parks. I'm a Red Sox fan and obviously you worked Fenway and then you've got, you know, Tropicana Field with that crazy roof and those rules. Like, so are there, Do you work differently based on the parks? Does the park configuration affect what you do? Just like players, do you have preferences? Like, do you like some parks better than others to work? What is that like?
Yeah, I think everyone has preferences. It could be the city. I mean, you know, I love working at Fenway. I like Boston. I love working in the old stadium, so I like Wrigley as well. Tropicana is a different animal because you have the rings up on the roof. So you really have to, you know, I mean, if I'm in Fenway and it's a fly ball hit to the outfield, I don't really have to watch the entire flight of the ball. I can kind of go to where I think it's going to land. And then I look at the player to see if he's going to catch the ball, trap it, drop it, whatever. Mm. But Tropicana, you have to really stay with the flight of the ball because it might hit one of those rings. Yeah. And, you know, depending upon where it hits, determines if it's a fair ball, foul ball, if it's a, you know, if it's one ring, it's a home run, you know, it's almost like a schoolyard, you know, when you used to play at the schoolyard. But
yeah,
so it's different in that sense, but pretty much, you know, the job is the same. Positioning is the same.
Yeah. And, so just before we jump, you had an incident with Brett Gardner, and you were the that ejected him in 2019 with that whole bat incident. Okay, tell people about that. And as you're going, getting into it with somebody, do you ever find yourself just sort of starting to laugh inside because it gets so crazy? Like what was that interaction like with Gardner for you?
Well, that was just, you know, he had been doing it every time that he was upset with an umpire's call. Or if one of his teammates was ejected, you know, he would do it. So it was obvious.
He was taking, let's remind people, he was taking his bat in the dugout, right? And like hitting the ceiling or something? Like what was that?
Yeah, he was banging the barrel of the bat on the roof of the dugout.
Yeah.
You know, his dugout.
Yeah.
And he was only doing it when he was unhappy about an umpire, you know, an umpire's call.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I've said before, you know, if he was doing it because he was so happy that his teammate just hit a home run, there's no issue, you know, with that.
Yeah.
But because it was just, displeasure, you know, I said that this, you know, I mean, you know, I've heard people say, and we watch a lot of video, right?
Yeah.
And I watched video and I heard people say, like different commentators say, well, gee, that's not in the rule book that you get ejected for that. Well, it's not in the rule book that you can't throw a tomato at an umpire either. But if he did that, you know, if somebody did that, he's going to get ejected.
Right,
so there's
right.
many things.
Right.
It doesn't have to just be in the rule book about it. But,
yeah.
You know, and after the fact, I didn't think of it at the time, but after the fact, I said, you know what? These guys are role models and the kids watch what goes on.
Yeah.
And, you know, if he continues to do that, the kids are going to be doing that in Williamsport, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So
you,
it was,
you had to drop the hammer a little bit. I hear you. Yeah.
And that was it. You know,
yeah.
I felt as though it was no different than somebody who continued to yell displeasure out of the dugout.
Got it. Well, listen, it is great to talk to you. I wish you the best of luck. Love to have you back on sometime to talk more baseball, and your backstory is amazing. People can go to wefightals.org to get involved in the great charity that you've created, and wish you the best of luck, and I'll be watching for you on TV. Great to have you on.
Thank you, Paul. Good to talk to you.
All right. Major League Baseball umpire right there, baby. Hope you enjoyed it. I did. Tour dates coming up. Go to paulmercurio.com. Check them out. See where I'm going to be. Come see me. Come have some laughs. We'll see you on the road. Avoid any stools that are metal. Don't sit on them. You're just asking for trouble. Tell your friends about the podcast. Please send the links around. And we will see you guys next week.